Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring. Snowing and blowing.
I was laying in bed last night about 3 in the morning when I started to laugh out loud. And I rarely laugh out loud in bed because it would disturb the dog. He'll think I'm crazy. And I started to laugh hysterically because the thought occurred to me that when I was a youth and still living with my parents, maybe 17, 16, 17 era, I left pretty young. I don't know when I left, 20. I have no idea when. I remember coming home after a night of carousing with my friends. Well, frankly, I remember coming home to that little attached brick house with the rock solid front door and turning that lock. There's something about that door. I've never been able to duplicate the doors they had on houses in those days and the locks. When you turn the tumbler on those houses, you heard the tumbler turn. You felt like Willie Sutton breaking into a bank. It was such a wonderful sound. And the minute the door opened, mothballs and heat assailed all of your senses. My mother kept the heat up at around, I'd say, 90 in the winter. And she put mothballs in every article of clothing known to me. And like the whole closet. You got to picture this house. An attached house, so to speak, semi-attached, right, brick, a row house, in other words. Think of a British movie from the 50s. Remember those movies, brick-attached houses? Now think Queens, 50s, post-war attached houses. Small, maybe 20 feet wide, the lot's 100 feet long, the house is maybe, what, 20 by 60, the yard's 40, front and rear, I don't really know. But the house was narrow, but it worked for me. It was like, to me, a palace after where we had come from. And when I got in that, so mothballs were in every clothing bag, but more than the clothing bags, in the hallway when you went in, and so hallway, you had to walk in sideways into the vestibule. But to me, it was wonderful. I didn't care it was a small hallway. At least I had a hallway. To the immediate right of the hallway was a closet door. She had mothballs in there, every piece of clothing and a vacuum cleaner to go with it. Everything was neat. Don't get me wrong. Nothing was jumbled. But in every coat, a mothball. The woman had, God bless her, she had a phobia about bugs. I don't know what it was. To keep the fur. I don't know. But I used to say, my, it's so hot in here. My eyes are smarting from the mothballs. Never mind. I like the heat. That was the end of the discussion. There was no discussing it at that point. She would have been great in talk radio, my mother. She closed the argument down just by answering what you started to say. There was no discussion. Never mind, I like the heat. That was it. There was no arguing, no reasoning. Perfect caller to a radio show. Actually, perfect host. But what was this thing with the mothballs? I don't understand. I'm starting to think there may have been a health benefit to mothballs that we don't even understand yet. That's when I broke into laughter in bed, and Teddy rolled over and looked at me like I was crazy. Play Jingle Bell Rock, would you?
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells.
I'm not going to get too wound up today, much.
Snowing and blowing.
I'm not going to get too wound up today, not.
Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell.
Seen the pictures of me yet? That's a great picture with the sunglasses.
Jingle bell time.
If I didn't have the brains I have, I would have been a movie star.
In the frost.
Holy, that's a great line. You know, I'm looking at myself, how good-looking I really was at my birthday, which wasn't too long ago. If I didn't have the brains I was gifted with, I would have been a movie star by now. And just think of what you would have lost. Indianapolis, Scott, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. Your Mama Savage was onto something with the mothballs. She probably never saw a mouse or anything in her house as long as she kept those mothballs going.
She hated mice. She was terrified of them. But she was trying to kill the moths. How did she kill the mice?
One of the chemicals in the mothballs apparently, because my mother and my grandmother did the same thing. They never had mice in their house, and according to a like home remedies book that my mother had, the mothballs, one of the chemicals in them, is a deterrent to mice.
You're kidding. She was terrified of mice. She was a strong woman and not very frightful, but terrified of mice. And I remember once we were in a rented cottage in the mountains, and a mouse got in the cottage. There were no mothballs there because she primarily used them in the in the house we lived in. She didn't have any up in the mountains. And man, she jumped up on a chair screaming with a broom at the mouse. Why are women afraid of mice? I don't want to go into it. I'm sorry. This is going to start the... Anyway, thanks for the call. I got the picture. I don't want to go into it. If you were an amateur student of history, and you were living in the 17th century, you would have come to the conclusion, probably, that it was only a question of a few centuries before the whole of Europe and Asia would fall under not Arab, but Mongolian domination. There were no signs of any Arabian expansion at that time. You would have been afraid of the Mongolian invasion at that time. And then suddenly something happened. Something that no one had ever seen before, not for 1,000 years. No Semitic people had founded an empire for 1,000 years. Then suddenly, out of nowhere, the Bedouin flared up for one century of phenomenal splendor. And the Bedouin spread their rule and language from Spain to the boundaries of China. And with it, they brought the world a new culture. And they created a religion that is still to this day one of the most vital religions on earth. The man who did this was named Muhammad. And I'm not going to go into the history of Muhammad. I believe that to those of you who are more interested. But this 100 years is very interesting. The great days of the Arabs, as I said, saw a Bedouin flare up and spread out from the regions from Spain into the boundaries of China. And it was one of the most amazing stories of military conquest in the history of the human race. The Byzantine army was smashed by the Arabs at the Battle of the Yarmouk in 634. That's a tributary of Jordan. Next, they conquered Syria, Damascus, Palmyra, Antioch, Jerusalem, and the rest, and they fell without any resistance whatsoever to the Muslim invasion. Those nations were not at that time Muslim, and most elements in the population went over to Islam. Then the Muslim armies turned east, and they went to Persia, now known as Iran. Persia at that time was not Muslim. They had a great general, the Iranians of those times, the Persians, called Rustam. They had a great force of elephants. And for 3 days they fought the Arabs at Qadizia. And then their army broke and they ran. And Persia was conquered. Persia was converted to Islam. Then the Muslim Empire pushed into the western Turkestan region. They pushed east until it met the Chinese. Egypt was not Muslim. And then Egypt fell without resistance to the new Muslim conquerors, the Arab conquerors, and full of their fanatical belief in the sufficiency of their book, the Quran, wiped out the vestiges of the book copying industry of the Alexandria Library. They sacked it. Then the Muslims turned along the north coast of Africa to the Straits of Gibraltar and Spain. Spain was invaded in 710. The Pyrenees Mountains were reached in 720. In 732, the Arabs had reached the center of France. Pay attention. But here the Arabs were stopped for good at the Battle of Poitiers and pushed back as far as the Pyrenees again, not by reason, but by steel. Egypt gave the Muslims a large seagoing fleet of ships. And for a long while, it looked like they would take Constantinople. But although the Arabs made repeated sea attacks with the captured Egyptian fleet, the great city held out against them. All you have to know is that this has happened before. It's happening again. Once again, Islam has conquered half of Europe, only this time they've done it without firing a shot. This time they did it through the Trojan horse of liberalism, a mental disorder. This time they have done it by using the guise of simply seeking salvation in Christian Europe, when we know, in fact, they want to take over Europe and convert it to Islam. It may be something quite different by the time your children are your age. The only question is, what is America going to be by the time your children are your age? The only question is, when are you going to awaken to the fact that we, too, are being invaded through a Trojan horse of liberalism, of compassion, of asylum, and primarily through the tool of immigration, which is out of control, Jackson. That's all you need to know is what I just taught you.
Savage.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Man, it doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought me some corn for popping. The lights are turned away down
according
low.
To the creationist view, let God produced snow, humans fully formed with no previous related species. Now, I happen to believe that evolution is God's tool. I'm in good company because Albert Einstein said the following. Einstein said, science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind. Now, I hope you people who are religious will take the blinders off and try to understand that you don't have to reject science to accept God. Florida, Todd, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, thank you. I was just about to say that I think you've been educated beyond your intelligence. And
is that an insult?
No, actually, I mean, I just think that
if it's an insult, sir, it's an insult that only you could understand because I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I think you've been classically conditioned to
And you've been classically uneducated. So, in other words, uneducation. And no education now is superior to education. You're starting to sound like Mao Zedong in China.
You said that I haven't been educated beyond my intelligence. You know, you're
no,
right.
No, no. What? How far have you gone in school?
The high school education. But
well, you sound like it. So why are you challenging me, a PhD with two master's degrees, as though you know more than me? You're starting to sound like a bigger idiot than you probably are.
Well, that's my base.
You're starting to sound like a bigger idiot than you are. You sit there thinking because you're high school educated, you know more than scientists? You're going to put down all of science because you went to high school? When you don't even understand what science is? But your preacher told you scientists are evil and they're the Antichrist? Is that what you're going to come to?
I just think if the theory of evolution were to fall apart, you'd lose a lot of your credibility because a lot of who you are as a person yourself is wrapped up in science. So, I mean,
who you are as a person is wrapped up in no education. Are you saying that you distrust the educated individual?
It depends on what their education is in, because I know that the science of today is science falsely called science.
I see. So who teaches the true science?
God teaches the true science.
And God speaks through your uneducated pastor, is that correct?
Well, he also has a PhD.
Where did he get his PhD from?
Congressional West Point appointment. So he is fairly educated.
He's fairly educated. He sounds like an ignoramus to me, wherever he got his degree from, because he's rejecting all of knowledge. He's rejecting all of knowledge and understanding. Will he next reject neuroscience because somehow it conflicts with his view of God? I mean, do you believe that medicine should be rejected because it's not God's will?
No, I believe that it is God's will. I believe that.
Well, why should you accept medicine if God didn't create that medicine? It's evil scientists who developed the medicine. And we all know that they're the Antichrist. Why would you use medication? Isn't it the evil design of man, not of God himself?
Well, its fullest extent.
Look, sir, I am not here to challenge your belief system, but I'm telling you that you need not reject all of science to accept religion and God. I don't understand where this is coming from. This seems to me a retrograde move in the United States. WOR, Jeff, you're on the Savage Nation. Where do you stand on the evolution question?
I believe that the nexus of science and theology is actually biblical and can be found in the actual words of the original Hebrew in the Bible. The very first word of the Bible, Bereshis in Hebrew, mistranslated as in the beginning, is a testament to your position on God's having created other existence prior to the existence related in Genesis. God says, Bereshis, it is but is the indefinite article, not the definite article, the. It is in a beginning. It is the construct form grammatically.
Hold on. Stop right there. Stop. You are a biblical scholar, I take it, Jeff. You read the original Hebrew?
Yes, I do.
So I assume you've had an education beyond high school?
In several disciplines.
So in the original Hebrew, the Bible says not in the beginning, but in a beginning?
In a beginning of God creating heaven and earth. The word created, and again, the appropriate exegesis of the language is a...
Hold on, someone may not understand that word. You're not actually using the name of the Christian God. You said exegesis, you didn't say Jesus, correct?
No, I did not say Jesus. I said exegesis as an interpreter.
Okay, well, that's a big word for many of my listeners, particularly those who don't believe in evolution.
Well, I guess if one's intelligence is correspondent with one's intellectual acumen and education, then such language is a function of ordinary conversation, isn't it?
So, Jeff, you are a biblical scholar, and where do you come out on evolution and God?
I believe that that God created humankind with the dynamic of evolution, with the ability to adapt to circumstances, situations, and to live with a sense of dynamic. God ordained us, God mandated us to subdue the universe. That is a declaration of learning science, of becoming knowledgeable. The first element of creation is in a beginning. It's beginning, it's time. God first creates time. Then God creates, and creates, by the way, in Latin, refers to creatio ex nihilo, to create something out of nothing. And God creates heaven, transcendental space, and earth, physical space, time, space, continuum.
So why, let me ask you a political question on this subject. Why is there a certain tendency now in certain quarters of America to reject evolution? Where is this coming from?
I believe that it threatens the intellectual ability to interpret and understand that there's a certain level of culpability that humankind has for its own actions.
So in other words, they want to create everything is God's will. We have no free will. We're going back to where we're just automatons, where it's all preordained. Not only was man created out of whole cloth, but one's life is preordained as well. Does that go hand in hand with the people who are anti-evolution?
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Out of all the reindeers, you know you're the mastermind. Run, run, Rudolph. Randolph ain't too far behind.
We have an overt Marxist incompetent in the White House, and the best the Republicans can offer are, let's go down the list, a Rockefeller Republican, a country club Republican, a retreaded old white wall tire that's been rolling around the beltway for about three decades. Here you got the DNC chairwoman from Florida, whatever her name is, Schultz, whatever, Becky, what's her name? Where is this? Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Florida Democrat, says that there's no such thing as voter fraud in America. And she says we should not have photo IDs. Now, you understand why the Democrats want illegal aliens to vote. You understand why the Democrats do not go along with what most American people want, which is voter identification. I mean, you do need voter ID. You need identification to drive a car. Is that correct? Don't you need ID to drive a car? What else do you need ID for? And yet to vote, when people died for the right to vote, this Deberman, Wasserman, Schultz, whatever, add another hyphenated name to that one. Florida Democrat says that we don't need voter ID laws. It's unbelievable to me. You know what was said in the ex-Soviet Union about this, don't you? Remember what Joseph Stalin said, all you good Democrats? He who votes does not have power. He who counts the votes has power. How do you like that one? You want to hear another one that came out of the ex-Soviet Union? One death is a tragedy. 1 million deaths, statistics. What else did they used to say in the ex-Soviet Union, Debbie, and all you other left-wing Democrat fascists? It is not important to have voted. It is important to have counted up the votes. I mean, you only have to look at Senator Al Frankenstein to see who won an election with less than 1,000 votes that are now thought to be fraudulent, to see why Acorn and the other fraud artists are so important to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Clinton, Obama. Do you understand that? Without voter fraud, there'd be almost no Democrat Party. Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, hyphen, Florida Democrat, hyphen, chairs the Democrat, hyphen, National, hyphen, Committee. Vote fraud is rampant in the United States of America, and photo IDs are the most important thing to protect the sanctity of the vote. Why must the Democrats keep coming up with these Debbie Wasserman stupids? Why? Why do they come up with these people who say there's no voter fraud, this and that? What is she saying? Unless we can cheat, we're screwed as a party? Why would any party oppose voter ID? There's only one reason, because they live off fraudulent votes. So I guess we're going to have to put the tea parties outside every polling place in America, and IDs will have to be demanded. I guess we're going to have to occupy the voting booths, the voting areas, and demand ID. That's all we're going to have to do. A survey was done, by the way, of the saddest cities in America, and what's astounding is the list. Saddest city, St. Petersburg, Florida. Now, why would St. Petersburg come out as the saddest city in America? Sunshine State, three of them. St. Petersburg, well, number one saddest city. Two, Detroit, you can understand that. Number three, Memphis, saddest city. Four, Tampa, Florida. Five, Louisville. Six, St. Louis. Seven, Birmingham. Eight, Miami. And how did they calculate which city is the saddest? The study was done by, I don't know what they looked at, the number of households that use antidepressants, as well as the number of people who report feeling down all or most of the time, and the rate, it's not the right word. When they say the rate of suicide, they really mean the incidence of suicide, but they don't understand epidemiology. The incidence of suicide and the amount of antidepressants used tell you if a city is sad or not. So St. Petersburg is number one, sad. Miami is number eight. They got people running around, dogs, bicycles, steaks, beer, cocaine. I mean, what more do you want? Why are they so depressed there? Happiest cities, Honolulu, Hawaii, Manchester, New Hampshire, Fargo, North Dakota is a happy city. Oh, my God. Could you imagine living in Fargo for the rest of your natural life? Omaha, Boston is a happy city. Why would Boston be a happy city? Madison, Wisconsin, happy city. Sioux Falls is a happy city. St. Paul, Minnesota is a happy city. Burlington, Vermont, happy city. And Plano, Texas. Plano, Texas is a happy city. I'm not going to ask you a question. What's the point? I'm so depressed. And to see that this flat tire, Newt Gingrich, is running up in the polls, it's sickening. Where the heck is Romney? Where is he? What in the world is this man thinking? 1-800-449-8255. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me three times, I'll take a pepperoni. Jeffrey in St. Peter's, Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I'm really happy in St. Petersburg. It's a beautiful city. And I'm going to support the retread that's been rolling around the Beltway for the last 30 years because I heard him last night announce that after he is inaugurated, one of the very first things that he'll do, Doctor, is move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And he went on to point out...
Well, okay, you know, he's doing that to appeal to the Jewish voter. But the thing is that Newt is a double talker. You know that.
I know he has baggage. But I also
baggage? He has a broken suitcase that he carries around with him. And he has a suitcase that goes back so far, it doesn't even have wheels on it.
I understand all of that.
He has a suitcase made of leather with a strap around it that he has to schlep through an airport. It doesn't even have wheels on it. And that thing is filled with so many skeletons that if they ever fell out, he'd be arrested for a Halloween impersonator.
But in all my years of following politics...
Come on. I'm not going to get mad tonight because, Jeffrey, I'll tell you the truth. I am so depressed at the thinking that we have the most incompetent, corrupt administration in history, and the best the Republicans can come up with is this marshmallow.
It's sad, but he's the first politician that I've heard...
Yeah, of course he says whatever people want to hear. How do you feel about him supporting the fraud of global warming with Nancy Pelosi?
He apologized for that.
Oh, that's okay. I'm sorry about World War II. I get it. I'm sorry I plunged us into Iraq. Sorry about that.
Not a Republican, Doctor. I'm not a Republican.
I know. Look, I'm not. I know you're a Republican. That's your problem. You need to be an independent. But okay, look. To each his own. I'm not going to get mad at you. The main thing is that you're listening, you're calling, you're thinking. That's all that matters. But you live in St. Petersburg, which is rated the saddest city in America. Why is that?
No, it's one of the greatest cities in the United States. They're using the wrong data. Doctor, you come down here.
Wait. I didn't use the data. It's a study that was done by somebody, and they said that the rate of the incidence of suicide and the amount of use of antidepressants ranks your city as the number one unhappy city.
It is true that every two or three weeks, someone jumps off the Skyway Bridge. That is true.
Oh, come on.
But I think it's because they like the scenery.
What is in St. Petersburg that drew you there other than sunshine?
Well, I came here after being in Europe for 10 years because this is where my father was. And in his side of the family, they died young. And when I was raising my children, he was always on the other side of the country, the other side of the world.
Yeah.
So I wanted to be near him in his final years. I came here in 1999.
He's still living?
Why?
Is he still living?
Yes, sir. He turned 87 in August.
Oh, God. Well, that was a smart move. But isn't St. Petersburg known for something other than sunshine?
Yeah, we got the Tampa Bay Rays.
The who? The Tampa Bay Rays?
You know, the guys that run around in pajama tops that you don't like. But
I'm not a sports fan. I don't even know who they are. What do they do?
Listen to me, doctor. I believe in baseball diplomacy. I've heard you talk about the pajama-wearing sports figures for years. But I spent 10 years in Europe building adult baseball teams, negotiating with administrators.
Oh, so you're a sports personality.
Sir?
Oh, come on. I'm in a sweat already. I'm in a cold sweat. I can't even give him a book. My eyes became blurry, and I broke out in a sweat from that call. You know, there's only so much you can take. I'm in a cold sweat from the head to toe. I need to change my shirt after this break.
Savage. Of a white Christmas.
The roads are full of new cars. People are on vacation already. How does this work? I don't know. What is there, like two societies that I'm living in? Do you want me to read from the political zoo, being sarcastic or satirizing politicians and media figures? Because most of you never heard of the book. Or you want me to do something else? It's open mic to Mike at the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Really, I'll work for you. We'll work for food. We'll work for you. We'll work for food. And in the political zoo, the satire of these various figures, I satirize Boxer, Bush, Jimmy Carter, James Carville, Hugo Chavez, Dick Cheney, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, George Clooney, Katie Couric, Maureen Dowd, Dianne Feinstein, Newt Gingrich, Ruth Gator Ginsburg, Rudy Giuliani. Where is he, by the way? How come he hasn't thrown his glasses in the ring? Al Gore, Jesse Jackson, Kim Jong-il, John Kerry, Larry King, Rush Limbaugh, Bill Maher, John McCain, Bill O'Reilly. That's why he never forgave me. It's why I'm banned on Fox News. He has the worst temper in the entire media, according to people who know him. The meanest of all of them is O'Reilly. No humor whatsoever. I mean, they claim liberals have no humor. This guy has never forgiven me for a few things I said about him. All I do is call him a leprechaun. Big deal, Bill. Sheesh, Bill. All I said was lecherous leprechaunus. I mean, what was so bad about that, Bill? Bill O'Reilly was known as top mammal in the Fox News pundit cage, the American porcupine being a large terrestrial rodent well protected by its prickly exterior. Ooh. And his Latin binomial was lecherous leprechaunus. When challenged, it erects its quills, swings its stout tail, and threatens to release the barbed tips into challenger's skin. Known for its grunting or groaning delivery, the porcupine is active mainly at night and is found occasionally on televisions in the sagebrush plains of the West. Also, according to legal filings that were settled, the American porcupine will occasionally try to find cable station staff willing to play games like fetch the loofah as part of its bizarre mating ritual. So that's why you never see Michael Savage on, you know, that talk show. They bring up talk shows you never heard of. Never Michael. It doesn't matter anymore. I'm too far advanced in my career for it to matter. So you could see why the O'Reilly factor runs the station. But until then, a word of warning to all you ladies out there in the Savage Nation, I wrote. If you phone O'Reilly's show during porcupine mating season, which lasts from about January to December, do your best to sound like Janet Reno, avoid the subjects of Greek food and cleansing devices, and above all, steer clear of the porcupine's biggest turn-on, namely himself. Oh! A porcupine in heat is a dangerous beast. If he loves you, you'll be able to count the ways. If he loves you, I haven't read this in years. If he loves you, you'll be able to count the ways. In fact, you'll be able to count them by the thousands while you pluck them the morning after. Oh, come on, Bill. Have a sense of humor. Don't be like Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton. Nancy Pelosi was known as, let's see, leftist irrationalis. Nancy Pelosi, leftist irrationalis. With its large beak and small head, the distempered rainbow parakeet. Ooh. The distempered rainbow parakeet caws with great frequency and volume, yet lacks mental capacity to emit anything original or intelligent. Fortunately, the bird has developed an adaptation that helps it to cope with this problem. The beak's large upper mandible is notched for its little bird foot to fit in. Decked with bright blue plumage, the female of the species mates for life, usually with strong and crafty males, capable of building large nests and stashing a surplus of fruits and nuts therein. Not only does this preserve the pair from want, but also frees the female to spend nearly all of its waking hours bobbing through the jungle, screeching at any animals not of its flock, and pretending to care about those that have no nests and food at all. Although its original habitat was Maryland, the breed has since migrated to the San Francisco Bay Area, where it aggressively climbed the political pecking order. Today it can be found both in California and Washington, D.C., chirping away mindlessly in either environ. Curiously, aside from its lower-than-average intelligence, the parakeet suffers from one prominent congenital disability. It is only capable of flapping about in circles, primarily because it is born with only a left wing. Nobody has ever written anything better than this. Political satire in our time. Sean Penn, pesky apologista. Native to the left coast, the big-beaked toucan is a colorful and perpetually ill-tempered bird of paradise, born and bred in the protected environs of Hollywood. But unlike most toucans, this one is strangely compelled to migrate to war zones and disaster areas. While adverse to the glare of flashbulbs, hence the bird's notoriety for striking out at photographers, the big-beaked toucan can deftly mimic the dove when in front of television news cameras. This particular breed of toucan gets its name from its decidedly large beak, perfect for tracking down bad scripts and sticking that giant proboscis where it doesn't belong. Not bad. Sean Penn, the toucan tough guy, has a long history of appearances in cinema. It's pretty good. I'm not going to read it all to you. Yes or no? Keep it up or not? What would you like to hear? Houston, Texas. Jared, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, who do you like?
Well, none of them are living.
Oh, gosh. I mean, if you do the zoo... And you had to identify...
Wait a minute. See, this is an interesting question. Must I like any of the Republican candidates? Is it a requirement?
No. But there's got to be someone...
So, in other words, I'm a commentator. Remember that. I'm only a commentator. And my job is to be a pain in the you-know-what for the political class. It doesn't matter what side of the aisle they're on. That's my job. Now, the truth is 80% of the criminals are Democrats. 20% of them are Republicans, and they're all bad. In that regard. But that doesn't mean I have to give one group a pass because they're not Democrats. The Democrats are virtually all corrupt. Every one of them is a corrupt socialist. Without exception. I don't know of a single exception. With Republicans, there's probably, I don't know, a good percentage of them who are honest men. But a lot of them are louts, total louts and criminals, just like their Democrat colleagues, which is why nothing changes in Washington. Which is a good thing, actually. It's actually a good thing because more or less the restaurants are still full. People are going away for vacation. Most of us could go around without guns in our hand. And we almost had an insurrection in America. Don't tell me it's Iowa again. I can't take it. First of all, I never met anyone from Iowa. That's number one. How do they know what's going to... Why do I care what a bunch of fat farmers in Iowa think about the election? How did this happen? This goes back to the 18th century. When Iowa was important. I don't understand how they get away with this. Hundreds of years later, they're telling us that a few obese farmers in a diner in Iowa, you ever see those people? They're going to tell me who's going to be the next president, and if they can, what does that tell you about the election? If a few fat farmers in Iowa can predict who's going to be the next president, what does that tell you about the government you have? Everything. Wow, you know how much that irritates me. Well, imagine how your throat will get this winter without Pine Brothers... Softish throat drops. That's right. I'm talking about Pine Brothers Softish throat drops we all grew up with. They're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors. Pine Brothers has been a trusted brand since 1870. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com.
That's PineBrothersYum.com.
Savage.
New York WOR. Daniel, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Michael, at the beginning of your show, you asked why people listen to you. Well, I tell you, I've listened to talk radio for years, and I've listened to you for years. You're the only place I can go where you're balanced, you're multifaceted. You give us the truth, and right now, America is in bad, bad shape. And I get inspiration from you. You talk about food, you talk about little Teddy. You're very human, you're ordinary, but then you're extraordinary. You're a man beyond your years, and I just wish and
beautiful. You're like a relative. You're like a relative I wish I had.
I mean, it's just incredible what you do. You inspire me. I work 14, 15-hour days. You pick me up at the end of the day, and you keep me going. You inspire me. I start writing my own stuff at night on how I can be a better
really?
Person.
Really? That's interesting. Let me ask you something. I did a diversion in the last segment about these old stories of mine that I found, and I read from one of them. Did you find that distracting, or did you find it was a good part of the show?
Oh, I find... It was refreshing. I still think about when you wrote about Dead Man's Pants, because as a kid, I lived through that. I wore Dead
Man's. Oh, interesting. You know, I told my agent I want to publish all of my unpublished writings in one or two volumes or one big volume, and he said, why? I said, because it will distinguish me from all the other people in the media. None of them have this. They have what they have, okay? I don't have to knock them. But none of them have this. None of them was a writer for 25 years, and none of them have the range of my interests and my abilities. And I said, that's the only way to distinguish myself. I don't want to do just another this or another that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you're courageous on top of that. When nobody else is courageous, you don't worry about anything. You just forge ahead with your own...
Well, I am. You see, this is not true. I do worry about it. I worry greatly about the evils of people in the government and what they might do to me. I do. But there's nothing I can do about it.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I was reading a little history last night about the fall of Rome. And in the reading of the fall of Rome, I know it's off the topic. I read about the Huns and how the Huns under Attila would invade a city and destroy the city and leave it depopulated. Now, I don't want to jump to some stupid conclusion here and to say that we have been invaded by the Huns here in the United States of America. But if you were to draw an analogy in a brief sentence or two, how would you describe the economically unproductive citizens that are running the United States of America at the federal level? They are the economically unproductive elements of society, by the way. Aristocrats, civil servants, and churchmen, by the way, were considered the economically unproductive citizens of the late Empire of Rome. The aristocrats, civil servants, and churchmen. Idleness, in other words, they don't really produce anything. Do the aristocrats of America, who would be who? Who are the aristocrats of America? Inherited wealth. They basically produce nothing. Civil servants produce nothing, by and large, except the police, perhaps. The police are out on the front lines. Don't confuse everyone who has a bunch of badges on their chest with a hero. Some of them sit behind a desk all their lives, and they get a badge for sitting at a desk. So how would you define them? I mean, my definition of the Obama administration is a little different than most of the time. Now it's well accepted by those who have an intelligent knowledge of history that we have a communist in the White House. Say, oh, that can't be. It hasn't been written about in the New York Times or he could not be a Marxist because they said it's not true on CNN. So what if he is a Marxist? Why doesn't he just come out and say he proudly represents the Marxist wing of the Democrat Party? Why would that be so hard? Because nobody would elect him again. They'd say, oh, that's not good. They don't know what Marxism is, but they know it's bad. And you can't make the jokes about the community. Everyone knows it means communist and revolution and, you know, oppression of people. That's basically what they think. But how different is, let's say you're on the Obama side. How do you define a man who refuses to cut back on spending and instead wants to attack the middle class with increased taxation? How else would you define him? His target is the middle class over and over again, the middle class. I don't care. You can define the middle class any way you want, but when you, every time you say the rich and it hits the middle class after he flies back from meeting with the super rich who give him the money to get reelected, what does that tell you? It tells you that it's all a fraud. Let's go to the callers instead. I don't think anyone cares about any of this. Honestly, I don't think anyone cares. I don't think they care that Corzine's company is short $1.2 billion. So what? So what? Big deal. What are you making a big deal of it? So what that he was a Democrat governor in New Jersey and he screwed everybody in New Jersey? So what? What are you going to do about it? That's not a real crime. Look what Bush did. $1.2 billion. That's nothing compared to the Iraq war. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 blah. So what if the DHS had nothing to do with any cases to do with Occupy taking over Oakland or illegal aliens or won't protect our border? They're concerned about turkeys. Isn't that good enough for you? They don't want people to have turkeys explode in outdoor ovens.
Savage.
So where do all the billions go? They disappear, but do they actually disappear? Where do they go? Well, I'll explain a little something to you right now. There was a company called Golden West Financial Corporation. Then there was World Savings Bank. At a certain point, Herbert Sandler and his wife Marion Sandler, and I believe Marion's brother, Bernie Osher, all big liberals in the Bay Area, big supporters of Feinstein, big supporters of Boxer, big donors to groups such as the ACLU, I believe. They made a fortune when they sold their bank to Wachovia for $24 billion. Unfortunately for the taxpayer, after the bank was sold, which consisted largely of mortgages that were worthless, there was nothing there. The acquisition was completed in October of 2006, and it was a major factor in the fall of Wachovia Bank. The Sandlers owned about 10% of the company at the time of the sale, and their share of the sale price was about $2.4 billion. Of this, the Sandlers gave $1.3 billion to their own foundation, the Sandler Foundation. Sounds good, right? Where did the money go? Well, it went to the Center for American Progress, a far-left, progressive so-called think tank, ProPublica, a radical leftist smear group, only left-wing reporting permitted, the ACLU, and other groups like it. Now, you have to ask yourself, why would billionaires who were in savings and loan or banking businesses, why would they give money to leftist groups like the Center for American Progress, ProPublica, or the ACLU, or even the National Lawyers Guild? Why would they give them money? Because this way they make sure they're never attacked by the mobs in the gutters of America. This way they get to go to have a lunch somewhere with these organizations and they tell them, you know, that Bank of America is a bad place. You know, that's a good place for your useful idiots to go into the streets and riot. You get those hysterical girls from Berkeley stoned up on, worked up on dope. Let them go there and screech outside the B of A. Meanwhile, by the way, we'll be in St. Bart's next month. Would you like to come down, Mr. ACLU? Don't you understand what this is? All of what's going on in America now has been organized. It's not spontaneous. The money has been traced. It started with one of the most distinguished people on earth. One of the finest hedge fund operators the world has ever seen, George Soros. He funded a lot of this. Not directly, of course. He had buffers. And the buffers would include groups such as the Tides Foundation. But then the Tides Foundation has buffers. And at the end of the day, we the people have to face the rabble in the gutters. Now, the rabble, it is true, are a threat to the public safety and the public health. Tuberculosis in Atlanta, scabies and ringworm in New York. This is how epidemics spread. I'm a trained epidemiologist. How do you think epidemics spread? It starts with very intense housing without hygiene, without sanitation, no running water, no toilet facilities. People sleep closely together. Venereal diseases spread. Other diseases are cultivated. And then it could spread into the general population. So you'd say, well, a mayor who is supposed to protect the public order, public health, public safety, even if you don't agree with me, you have to agree that a microbe does not discriminate. Even if you're the biggest ILGWU phony living in New York, walking around with your head held high, still outraged at the rich Republican, even you could be affected by a microbe from the Occupy Wall Street. You may not know it, but you see, a louse respects no boundaries. You may be the best Democrat in the world. You may be such a good socialist, but that louse has no knowledge that you're a good Democrat. And if it gets underneath the cuff of your pants, as you're marching around with your big mouth about bring it all down, you too could wind up with a disease. You don't even understand that your public health and your public safety right now is being threatened, because without order there could be no civility. And so I go back to my point. Yes, there's plenty of blame to go around, but it didn't end yesterday. It's not Bank of America robbing America today. It's the Kennedy Organization got $1.4 billion. The other day we found out Feinstein traded in stock after making sure it got a $24 million grant. 2 weeks before, it was Pelosi. Then it was a Republican with a ranch. Don't you understand what's going on here? I mean, thank God 60 Minutes was able to release that. I know it was held for well over a week. And it was held because of political pressure from the Democrats who were named, who brought pressure to bear upon the CBS board of directors, I'm sure. But apparently they could not crack Stephen Croft. Apparently he's been there long enough to be able to be have the semblance of journalism come out on the air, and he should be lauded for it. He is the only member of the mainstream media who has done anything of any value in the last 10 years. All the rest is simply throwing stardust in our eyes. Lady Liberty has been raped at the same time, and yet we're not hearing much about the rape of Lady Liberty. Lady Liberty is laying there bleeding in the gutter, having been raped by our very own representatives in many cases, who have been conducting insider trading. Insider trading, making hundreds of millions of dollars, granting their friends billions upon billions of dollars. Lady Liberty is laying broken in the street, raped and bleeding. And so as I say to you, yeah, there's a lot of blame to go around, but don't only look at Bank of America. Take a look at what went on before B of A and what's going on right under your nose.
Savage.
Of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know.
With this act, because of the bravery of our troops, the sacrifices of their families, and the leadership of President Obama, we are able to say the war in Iraq is over.
To hear sleigh bells in the snow.
Troops are coming home for the holidays with their families. President Obama promised to end the war in Iraq responsibly. Promise made, promise kept. 150,000 troops were in Iraq when President Obama took office. That number will now be reduced to just a couple thousand.
Be merry and bright.
I'm going to lighten things up a little bit because it gets too hot. We got to slow her down. We'll come back to very strong politics in a minute. Many people would like me to read from Abuse of Power, but I'm going to ask you a favor. If you bought the book, and many, many tens of thousands of viewers have done so, if you will call in with a 30-second piece that you like the best, I will give you a free copy of the book that you can give away for the holidays, okay?
But let me see if I can find... Here, I'm going to read you a piece. Tel Aviv, Israel. My character, Jack Hatfield... Oh, am I giving something away? Uh-oh. Wait a minute. I don't know if I can give you... All right, I'll read you this paragraph. Tel Aviv, Israel. Way into the book, in the middle of it. Welcome to the city that never sleeps, the Reb said as they exited the highway. Traffic was light on the new express lane into Tel Aviv, and the drive-in from Ben-Gurion International Airport had taken them only 20 minutes. Rabbi Mel Nirsham had come in from San Francisco on an earlier flight to make the appropriate arrangements for Jack's arrival. Jack had known Nirsham for many years now. They'd met through a mutual acquaintance, Bill Hicks, a private detective. Hicks and Hatfield frequented the same restaurant, a place on Columbus, the North Beach restaurant, where they both liked to eat at the bar as they watched the crowd coming and going while they talked what they called the unholy trinity, sports and politics and religion. The city's ruling elite still ate there. Pelosi, Brown, the former mayor, all the known and hidden power brokers. One night, Hatfield brought up his disenchantment with the Catholic Church, echoing his father's own discontent, and complained that it had lost its edge and become too pacifist. No fire, no brimstone. If you're looking for fire and brimstone, Hicks said, you should check out my old friend, Rabbi Nirsham, toughest Jew I know. The more he heard about this rebellious Rebbe, hence the Reb, the more curious Jack got. Although he'd been raised Catholic, he'd always been attracted to his mother's history and culture. So a few days later, he set up a meet with Nirsham, discovered a kindred soul, and the two became instant friends. And when the Reb found out Hatfield had Jewish blood, he insisted Jack join him and his friends on Friday nights for prayer, vodka, and a home-cooked meal, an invitation Jack had accepted more than once. This is from Abuse of Power, page 169. Hicks had been right. Nirsham was a tough old Jew. The product of an Orthodox day school, the Reb had fallen out of love with Judaism in his late teens, and much to his parents' dismay, decided to rebel. He was a hippie in the 60s, later a boxer. Then in his middle years, he rediscovered his roots with a fierce passion and spent 5 years studying Jewish law at a rabbinical seminary in New York. This was followed by a year in Israel before returning to San Francisco as an ordained rabbi. The Reb was a black hat, a Chabad Lubavitch Hasid, who often spent weeks at a time in Tel Aviv. Jack himself hadn't been here in years. The first thing he noticed now was how much the place had grown. Comparisons to New York were no longer as laughable as they'd once been. Tel Aviv was a thriving metropolis perched on the edge of the Mediterranean. Everything about it screamed big city. So where are we headed, he asked the rabbi as they took the exit. First, we do something about those clothes. Jack was wearing jeans and a suede leather jacket. You want to blend in with us. You'll have to look the part. Hatfield had once asked him why Hasidic Jews always wore dark clothing. And Nirsham explained they were more concerned with what was on the inside rather than what was fashionable. In fact, these Hasids wore 19th century Polish business garb. They were stuck in a fashion time warp. I'm not so sure about blending in, Jack said. If I dressed like you, I'd probably look more like Johnny Cash than Menachem Schneerson. The rabbi smiled. Bring a guitar, you'll get all the girls. Anyway, I won't read you anymore because it starts to give away too much of the plot. It's, some of the lines are very funny, by the way. Let's see. All right, I'll read you a little bit more because it's fun. Page 171. I'm trying to skip plot elements so that you go out and you read the book yourself. Let's see. It hadn't taken much convincing to get the rabbi involved in Jack's plight. The Reb was rumored to have connections to both Mossad and the Israeli mafia, and while he wasn't a violent man, he'd never shied from a good fight. He was also known to quote Rabbi Meir Kahane, the founder of the Radical Jewish Defense League, who was assassinated in a Manhattan hotel room in 1990 by persons unknown. Every Jew, a 22, the Reb had said more than once. A staunch proponent of the Second Amendment, the Reb had always supported a well-armed citizenry, which he believed was the only way to keep another Castro or Stalin or Hitler or Chavez from rising in America. The one thing that stops an evil government from seizing total power, he once told Jack, is fear of millions of armed citizens. The Brits learned that lesson a couple of hundred years ago. Yet despite his tough talk, the Reb was genuinely a kind and friendly man. He acted as a missionary to fallen Jews he met in the streets of San Francisco, trying to bring them back to God. He'd saved many a drugged-out soul over the years, and they loved him for throwing them a spiritual life preserver when they were drowning. In some ways, Jack was in need of a life preserver himself, and once he told his story, the Reb was all too happy to help. Michael Savage, Abuse of Power, the finest novel written about San Francisco since Jack London, in my opinion. And it's in my humble opinion. I wouldn't say it if I actually didn't believe it. I mean, you think it's tongue-in-cheek? You're mistaken. My descriptions of San Francisco and of the Bay and of boating have never been surpassed by anybody that I know of, or I wouldn't have written the book. I guarantee it.
Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
If you missed my interview with Donald Trump yesterday, here it is. You're listening to the Savage Nation. With us right now is billionaire Donald J. Trump, the world's most famous businessman, with his new book, Time to Get Tough. And the fact of the matter is, Donald Trump has been on this program before. He stepped away from running for president for now. And we're going to ask him a number of questions. Donald Trump, thank you for joining us on the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael. How are you?
Well, I'm glad that you're on the air. I missed you when I was in Florida. It would have been fun to have some shrimp together.
Good. Well, you have to stop by. I'm in Florida right now, actually. It's beautiful. I'm shivering. The weather is beautiful.
We're shivering out here. Look, Donald, here's the thing. I want to talk about your book, but my listeners are clamoring to know one question, and I have to ask it of you, and I think you would be disappointed in me if I didn't ask it.
Okay.
They're saying, why would you consider running for president in 2012 if that's what you are thinking of doing, when they believe splitting the ticket that way and pulling off X percent of conservative votes would only hand the election to President Obama?
Right. Michael, I'd rather not do it. But if the wrong Republican candidate gets chosen, which is possible, I mean, I'm looking at what's going on like yo-yos. I've never seen anything like it. And
right.
If the economy continues to be bad, which it probably will, because I think we have an incompetent leader. I think he doesn't know what he's doing, certainly as to the economy and other things. I would certainly consider it. And I really feel this way. People do not love the Republicans. I'm a Republican. People do not love the Republicans, to put it mildly, and they certainly don't love the Democrats. And I think at this time, the right independent could absolutely win. Now, I happen to think if I ran, I'd take a lot of votes away from Obama. But I agree, it could hurt the Republicans. I actually think the Republicans wouldn't win. I think I'd have a good chance of winning if I ran. And polls show me that. But
interesting.
I really believe that I would.
Well, you said something interesting. By the way, one of my callers agrees with you that you would actually pull a lot of the independents away from Obama.
I really think I'd take more votes away from Obama. And people are surprised when I say that. But everything indicates that I would take more votes away from Obama. If you look at what China's doing to us, if you look at what the world is doing to us, if you look today, I mean, take a look at Iraq. It's blowing up. And I've been saying, Michael, I was on your show many times, and I said, the day we leave, and I didn't mean the day, but I said the day we leave, Iraq is going to blow up. Look what happens with, you see what's going on, where they want to arrest the vice president. They're going to end up having a civil war. Now, I didn't think it was going to take one day. It turned out I was right. You know, we left.
Donald, look what they're doing to... Look what they're doing to Christians in this liberated Iraq. Churches are being burned. Christians are being killed, driven out of Iraq. It's astounding what went on there. In your book, which we have to talk about because I'm an author and I know what it's all about, Time to Get Tough, Making America Number One Again, I want to highlight some of the things that you point out. The right president can make America rich again. You say, right. Take the oil. Amen. Do I believe in that? He said, we are the Saudi Arabia of natural gas.
Right.
China is not our friend. Get tough. Tax China for cheating. Why demonize rich people? Amen to that. My $100 million gift to the U.S. goes uncollected and so forth and so on.
Nobody
calls. Do you think these points in your book, Time to Get Tough, will resonate with the average American?
I think so. The book is selling great, but I think so. I mean, I really do. And the $100 million gift, I offered to build a ballroom for the White House. You know, when a dignitary comes to the White House, they're in a tent. They put them in a tent. And I saw that. And I said, you know, here we have the United States. I said, if they can't, I'm very good at ballrooms. I built the best ballroom in the country in Mar-a-Lago, which is in Palm Beach, Florida. And
gorgeous.
You've seen it. And
yes.
To be honest, I'm good at building ballrooms. So it's going to cost anywhere from $50 to $100 million. So I told representatives at the highest level of the Obama administration, listen, I will make a gift. I will build the greatest ballroom anywhere in this country at the White House. We'll pick 10 architects, all great. We'll choose the one we like, and we'll build something spectacular that goes with it. I never heard back. This is what it's all about. I never heard back. A $100 million gift.
Donald, you know why you never heard back? The reason you didn't hear back is because no one could grab any vigorish off your gift.
I think you're right. Actually, I think you're right.
Time to Get Tough. Billionaire Donald J. Trump says it's time to make America number one again. I want to go to one of your key points because I've published the same in Trickle Up Poverty, the tariffs on China. But I love what you say about the oil. Take the oil. What do you mean by that?
Well, I'll give you two examples, and they're both, I think, 100% valid, although we've lost one opportunity pretty much because we were there. What we had to do is stay. As sure as you're sitting there, Iran will take over Iraq. They may let a little more time go than one day, but already that country is imploding, and you can see what's going on over there with the president and everything. It's a disaster. So, and as sure as you're sitting there, Iran is going to take over Iraq. And what people don't know is that Iraq has the second largest oil reserves in the world, okay, after Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. So Iraq is going to be taken over by Iran. And I think even more than the country, they want the oil. So I said, every time you have a war, you know, to the victor belong the spoils, I said,
amen,
we should keep the oil. Or we should at least, at a minimum, pay back the $1.5 trillion. Now, they have $15 trillion of oil reserve. $15 trillion.
Right.
We spent $1.5 trillion on that ridiculous war. So
right.
I say we, number one, take that. Number two, every soldier killed should get $5 million for the family. Now, you know, it sounds like a lot of money. It's nothing compared to
nothing.
The value of it. You know, it's peanuts. It's a tiny, tiny, tiny little fraction.
Beautiful.
Every soldier killed should get $5 million, and every soldier so badly wounded. You know, I have a lot of events for soldiers that are wounded in particular in that war, and they're so badly wounded, without legs, without arms, I mean, just horribly wounded. And they should get a couple of million, two, three, four. They're going to be paying medical costs for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Their lives are so badly hurt and so badly damaged, and they should get a few million dollars at a minimum. It's a tiny, tiny little fraction. Okay, we should keep the oil. Now, the trucks have all left. It's harder now. It's harder. You have to go back in, et cetera, et cetera. Now they'll say it's a sovereign country. How dare you even? But an even easier example was this. When we had Libya, and Gaddafi was absolutely routing about 7 or 8 months. People forget. But he was routing the so-called, you know, the wonderful rebels, as they call themselves.
Yes.
Like in Gone with the Wind, even though they come from Iran and also they were our enemies. But, now, you know, now they're our great friends, but they're not our friends. So they came to us 7 months ago. And they said, we're being routed. We can't hold out more than another 2 days. Will you help us? Obama said yes, you know, through NATO, but we're NATO. So Obama said yes. Now, if he would have said, yes, I will help you, but we want 50% of your oil, they would have said, absolutely 100% you have a deal. Signed right here on the dotted line. You would have had it signed in 10 minutes. It would have been over, and we would have gotten
unbelievable.
Help. And we would have picked up $2 trillion worth of value. We didn't do that. We're stupid. We're stupid. And now, by the way, if you went to them and said, you know, now they're all splitting up the oil, all the rebels are having a lot of fun. You could probably have 20 Gaddafis. And by the way, the worst one will emerge as the leader. The worst one, and the one that hurts our country the worst, or the most.
Uh-huh. Always, it's always true. The most vicious win.
Those are two examples. Iraq, keep the oil. We didn't do it. It's gone. And the other is Libya.
I got to say something. If you do run and you do win, I should be your Secretary of State, and I'll tell you why. Back in 06 or 08, I wrote a book called Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. I'm not asking you to agree with my premise, because you'd lose half the members of your club. But in that book, I said that this could turn out to be Obama's greatest blunder. Because it's going to create a greater Persia. I looked at it. I looked at the map. I knew that Iraq was once part of Persia. I knew that Ahmadinejad was ruling a Shiite nation. I knew that Saddam, as bad as he was a minority Sunni controlling the Shia. And here we are looking exactly at what I predicted and what you say is going to happen, because it is happening. It's amazing to me that ordinary citizens such as you and I seem to know more than the political class itself.
Well, it's really common sense. My only question is, and my only doubt is, will a shot be fired, or are they just going to make a deal? Because if you notice, Iran has become very close with the rulers of Iraq, very, very close. And they're doing deals, they're making business, they're doing lots of things. So my only question is this. There's no question that they take it over. I wonder about two things. Timing, I think it's going to be very soon. And the other thing is, will a shot be fired? Because I'm not even sure a shot will ever be fired. I think they're just going to merge out. And we will have destroyed all of these lives, and we will have spent $1.5 trillion so that Iran can take over Iraq. And as sure as you're sitting there, that's what's going to happen.
And right, and that was so. That's Bush's greatest blunder. I don't understand how people don't see this.
Bush, and then it was carried forward. That's true. Hey, look, I'm no fan of Bush. Bush is not my guy. Bush, what he did, you know, when the World Trade Center came down, it wasn't Iraq that knocked down the World Trade Center. Okay, when the World Trade Center came down, and you know, say what you want about Saddam Hussein, he killed the terrorists. If there was a terrorist, they shot him. Right? There were no terrorists in Iraq. Now it's the Harvard. It's the breeding ground. If you want to be a terrorist, you go to Iraq. That's where they teach you how to be a terrorist. It's Harvard of terrorism. So, you know, I'm no fan of Bush, but it was then it was exacerbated, and then they leave. And by the way, you know, they're all saying, well, great, we live. We got thrown out. They didn't leave. You know, as you know, Obama wanted to stay. He wanted to keep a military force there. They said, no, we want you out, and they threw us out.
It's time to get tough. It's time to get tough by Donald Trump, who is tough-talking in real life and would be a tough-talking president. So I'm going to ask you this. Romney is a milquetoast. Romney is not conservative enough for me socially or militarily, I don't think. But isn't he better than Obama?
Well, I actually think almost anybody is better than Obama. I think Obama is a complete and total catastrophe. I think if you look at you know, who is running. I mean, almost, you could almost say anybody is better than Obama. You could pick somebody
right.
off the street and say,
right.
I think you'd do a better job than Obama.
You're making me laugh because, I mean, I can say these things, but you're not supposed to say them, Donald. You have friends
care.
At the highest
me,
places.
I don't care. You know, I do say things, and people, I guess, they like to listen because everybody wants me on their shows, so obviously they want them. And I love doing your show, and I love listening to you. One of the great pleasures is sitting in my car listening to your show. I don't get to do it enough because I'm not in my car that much, okay, but I love it. But I will say, I just say what's on my mind, and I don't care what people – you know, when I say keep the oil – people would say, huh, I never heard of that. You know, in the old days, you had a war. If you won the war, you kept the whole place, right? Now, think of it. We won a war, and we leave. We won a war. We spend $1.5 trillion, thousands of lives and injuries and everything else, and then we leave. What do we get out of it? And now,
Donald,
one day after the
No, I hear you. Right. What was the point of the war? What, to liberate 24 million ungrateful Shia? I don't understand it.
But we didn't liberate anybody, Michael. It's going to be a civil war over there, the likes of which you've never seen.
And Donald, when we come back on the Savage Nation, I'd like to open it up to a few questions to the millions of listeners to the program. But I have a number one question the minute we come back from this commercial break, which is North Korea. Nobody has mentioned the fact that one of the world's great dictators has died. They talk about him as though he was just another leader in a bland term. We know he was a mass murderer. I'd like to hear your opinion on what you would do with North Korea. Let's take a break from my interview with Donald Trump. We'll be right back here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I heard the bells on Christmas Day, their old familiar carols play.
Hey, welcome back to the Savage Nation. Here is part two of my interview with Donald Trump. The world's most famous businessman is Donald Trump. 1-800-449-8255. He's on the program right now. You may not know this, but we grew up in a very similar neighborhood. He was the son of German immigrants. His father was the son of German immigrants, who became an entrepreneur and created thousands of jobs and wealth and homes for thousands of people. I lived on the other side of Union Turnpike, and his wonderful mother was an immigrant from Scotland. And Donald Trump is an entrepreneur who has created thousands and thousands of jobs. You don't have to, you know, there's a lot of naysayers out there about everybody, myself included. Anybody who does anything is attacked in this country. Donald, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael.
Donald, why is it that people hate people who are successful? Have you ever looked at the psychology of that?
Well, I don't like to even think about it. I get a lot of good plaudits. And in fact, you know, one thing I did in my book is when I was thinking very seriously, and I still am, about running, I did a financial disclosure form. And it's a huge form. It's a form that covered many, many, many pages. And I took the summary pages, and I said, you know, I'm a private company. Nobody knows what I'm worth, but I'm going to put it down in my book. And
amazing.
I actually put, and I don't know if you noticed this, but
it's right in front of me, page 180 and 81. This is your tax form. How'd you do? You put Schedule A in the book.
Right. I put the summary sheets in the book of my net worth and my cash and my debt and how much debt I owe, and it's very little, and how much I'm worth, and it's a lot. And I said to myself, you know, I'm very proud of the company I built, and a lot of people don't know. They'd say, oh, he's full of crap, or, he's really not. But now they see the numbers, and they're really, you know, I think they're very impressed. Some people, the smart people that know me and know something about my company, they sort of estimate it. But I gave the numbers, and I put the numbers out there, and I'm very proud of it, Michael. You know, I'm very proud of the numbers.
You should be.
It came out to over $7 billion. I built it in a relatively short period of time. The cash is tremendous. The lack of debt is amazing to people. And that's the kind of a country we need. We need a rich country in order to do the kinds of things that a lot of the liberals want, okay? I'm a fan of Social Security, big one. I'm a fan of Medicare. But we have to be able to afford it. And this country can't afford it. We owe $15 trillion, and then we go into wars and we don't get anything for them. You know, so it's a very sad situation.
Donald Trump's book is Time to Get Tough. Listen to this. Real tort reform right now. I could have written that, Donald. You're the only one daring to take on the trial lawyers. Then you said it's called illegal immigration for a reason. Hey, borders, language, culture. That's beautiful. No one else is talking about this, Donald.
No, they don't talk about it. And, you know, one of the things that is really amazing, we use our schools to educate people that then compete against us. And you'll have kids coming over from China, from India, from all these countries. They go to Harvard, they go to Yale, they go to the Wharton School of Finance. We educate them, and then we throw them right out of the country. And I do talk about a merit-based system for coming in. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, isn't that terrible what he says? I don't care what they say. If somebody is a person of great achievement, a doctor, some kind, I won't even say a lawyer, okay, but a doctor, a physicist or whatever, and they want to come into the country, we're to make it easy for them to come into the country. If they graduate from Harvard at the top of their class, and then we throw them out, we take away their card, and we throw them out the day after graduation, and they go back to China, and they become our competitor when they actually wanted to stay in this country, I think we're just crazy. So we ought to have a real merit-based, I call it merit-based. If somebody is a person of achievement, we should make it easy for them to come into this country because that's good for this country. Problem is we take people that are not going to help us, that come in illegally and in many cases are criminals and causing tremendous crime and killing people. And by the way, those are the people that stay. But if you go to a great school and you do well at that great school, we throw you out immediately. Now, you tell me, Israel. So I like a merit-based system.
Well, there has to be a cap on that as well. Now, you do erect the world's best buildings, including the Trump World Towers at the UN Plaza. You know, building a building can't be easy. I know what it's like to renovate a small suburban house.
Right.
And that can go wrong, Donald. It can go. You take a three-bedroom, two-bath house. Many people listening to this show probably flipped houses during the real estate boom. They hired guys to do the tile and to do the floors over, right? They know what a mess it is dealing with subcontractors.
Right.
In a nutshell, Donald, what's the secret to being a real estate baron and being able to manage the construction of a building? What, is it hiring the best managers or what?
Well, it's a lot of things. I mean, number one, I sort of pride myself on being able to get location. That's like an athlete. You know, I mean, there's a great baseball player. They can hit a ball. They can play golf better than other people. I've always had an ability to get a good location or to see what a good location is and transform it into a good location.
Mm.
And I've had that ability. And then I've had the ability to go out and get zoning and get it approved and get the building built under budget and ahead of schedule and build a better product. I mean, I'll build products that are better than my competition, and they do better than the competition, but I was always able to get great locations for some reason.
The book is Time to Get Tough, Making America Number One Again by Donald Trump. Tax China to Save Jobs, Strengthen American Muscle. It's worth reading, Donald. It's not just hype. It's a small book, but it's an important book. It's very pointedly important because people will listen to you, and it will start the dialogue going. And I think it's very important that people look at this. And I'm going to make a prediction, Donald. This show generates more book sales than any other radio show in this country. There are shows that are bigger, but there are none that have more of a poignantly loyal audience than mine. You watch what happens today on your sales, and
well,
you're going to see
that
you've...
Thank you.
Oh, no, you're going to see that you've got real estate in Michael Savage.
It for that reason. I have to tell you, I did it because I think you're fantastic and I think your show is fantastic. And you know what? That's great. And Amazon.com is probably the easiest place.
Donald, thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning.
The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Sex sells. And so we know that the bums in the parks of America with the Occupy movements are basically there for the drugs and the sex, and they have nothing to do with their lives. They're unemployable. And they're unemployed because they're unemployable. They're unemployable because of their attitudes. Their attitudes and their lack of training. They have nothing that they have anyone needs. They have no product or service that anybody in the world wants. There's nothing to do with corporate America. It has to do with the fact that they went to school and studied something no one needs. Or they never went to school, that's all. So now they're rutting in the tents like mink in heat. And now they're all testing for AIDS, HIV, other STDs before they go home to mommy with the sniffles. What they should have learned is what my mother said. Sex is dirty, especially if you're laying in a tent with a stranger. What do you expect to happen? What do you expect is going to come out of it? Something good? And so years ago, Beowulf, what is the date of that call, of my mother's call? Do you have a date on it? I wish we did. 2003. 2003. So my mother was about 85 at the time. She passed a few years after that, and I called her at her the facility in Florida. I'll never forget as long as I lived. And she set me up, you know. She really was smart, and she had a sense of timing that was astounding. And she caught me, the wise guy talk show host, off guard. Listen to this cut from Mama Savage and Michael on the No Sex. Listen.
What do you think is the secret to longevity?
What's the secret?
Yeah. Because you're an elder, you're 83.
Yeah, my case, what it is, I think.
What?
No sex.
No sex. Well, that in San Francisco is a sin, what you just said, because these people believe that the more is better.
Right, let's stop right here. It's very funny. she set me up. She set me up. She had a sense of timing. She always had. She should have been in show business, my mother. But she was burdened with life's problems. She didn't have a chance. So here I am, no sex. But they don't believe that today. They think that more sex is better. You know, if it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? And look what we have as a result. There's a lot to be said for sexual repression. That's almost like sacrilege to say that you should suppress sexuality. It's almost pornographic what I just said to you, that you should suppress sexuality in an over-sexualized society. All of Western civilization was created because of repressed sexuality. I've read that too. It's actually a very good theory. You take that energy and you harness that energy and you do something with it other than rut like a mink in a dirty tent. You write something, you paint something, you come up with something, you create something, you build a business, you raise a child. That's what you do with the energy. You don't have to, you know, run around day and night looking for sexual outlets like the vermin in Hollywood tell you you do. They're so happy. Take a look at them. That's why they're in and out of rehab. They're doing so well. That's why they're in and out of rehab. Play some music. How about if I were a rich man and I wanted to hear immediately in the back of my head? I don't know why. I don't know why I wanted to hear Fiddler on the Roof. This song could be dedicated to some of Obama's supporters, but that wouldn't work, truthfully. If I said that, it'd be misconstrued.
All day long I'd biddy-biddy-bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work.
What's this with Greece? Why is Greece now the linchpin of this collapse of the world? Well, you know, it's an interesting, metaphorically, it's a very interesting concept that Western civilization is based upon the thinkers, the Greek, you know, the Greek logicians were philosophers of thousands of years ago. It's very fitting that all of the West should collapse based upon the Greek laziness of today. Why are they? Is it lazy or is it the socialist government?
There was a time Greeks worked. It's not always been like this. Homeland to monitor. Oh, whatever. Greek leak. What is this now? Greek voice. What is this? What is it? Military chiefs replying. Again, it's the movie Z by Kazantzakis. Kazantzakis didn't do Z, sorry. Kazantzakis wrote some other great books. I forget who did the movie Z. I love that movie. It was a leftist movie about the right-wing takeover in Greece. We should only have a right-wing takeover. Maybe they go to work again. Cut off the social services and make them work for a living. Now, this is what happens. You see, this is interesting. Greece is to Europe what the bums in Zucchini Park are to America, or to the middle class. The bums in the parks of America who are screaming corporate this and bail me out, they want you, the middle class, to support them, even though they don't provide anything anyone needs. In other words, they're bums. Greece is the Occupy movement of Europe. All they do is sit around smoking and complaining and polluting the atmosphere and destroying the Parthenon with fumes. It's sad. I mean, it's a beautiful civilization, but its time has come. I mean, it's like Portugal was once a world power. Where are they today? The rich live behind 40-foot walls in outside of Lisbon. That's where America's going. I saw this coming 15 years ago. I told my family, eventually the middle class here is going to have to be like in Brazil, living behind gates with armed guards. Guys with, like, shotguns walking around to protect your property. That's coming here. What is a unique? America's unique in that regard. Its uniqueness is over. Take a look who the president is. A communist radical took over the government. What do you expect? He's like Chavez. He's like the guy from Bolivia. There's no difference. Same exact mentality. They're all his buddies. They think the same way, same wavelength. And the cronyism. The cronyism is shocking. You talk about corruption. So now Greece is the linchpin all of a sudden. What happens if the... you see, the Europeans were never permitted to vote on whether they should be members of the EU because the sentiment in Europe is against joining this new communist empire called the EU. The EU is new communism in plain English. It's a soft form of communism, albeit it's not a Soviet-style communism. Make no mistake about it. It's a market-based socialism, but it's a new communism. That's what the EU is. It's a giant welfare state. So you take a productive nation like Germany, where the people are... still have a work ethic, and they're being told, you have to support the bums of Greece who have no desire to work. Why should they do that? Why should they bail out Greece? Why shouldn't Greece be allowed to fall and have runaway inflation until eventually they pick themselves up by their own souvlaki? I don't understand this. Why do the Europeans insist upon the EU? Because there's more power and fewer hands in plain English. Plain English, that's all. It's socialism. So there it is. The government is not falling. It's like Z all over again, the movie Z. You have to watch that movie. It's pretty interesting. So the Europeans now have to bail out Greece, which is quite telling in its own regard. But I would say let Greece fall. My position would be let Greece fall. Dissolve the EU. It was a noble idea that failed. It never could work. Because the socialists are who wanted the EU to begin with. The people who believe in individual freedom and did not want to be dictated to by a group of child molesters from Brussels always opposed joining the EU. But no one ever asked the people to vote on it. And maybe they could regain their sovereignty and reestablish their borders, language, and culture all over again. Nationalism could rise in all of these nations. I don't mean an unhealthy nationalism. There's a huge chasm between a healthy nationalism and an unhealthy nationalism. An unhealthy nationalism becomes fascism. But a nation without nationalism becomes nothing. And we are becoming a nothing nation because not one politician will talk about our borders, language, and culture the way I do. Not one. You understand that? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to the callers. Chico, California. Mike, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
I'd like to comment on why your ratings are going up.
Please.
And my idea is that it's because of many people like myself in our mid-30s who relate to many of your stories from your mid-30s, running to the top of the hill and such. But, you know, we are old enough that, like my grandfather was a World War II veteran, proud to be an American. You didn't disparage any American aspect in front of him. I'm old
Yes.
enough to have experienced that, but then still young enough to have gone through school and been taught to be ashamed of all of that. And,
can you imagine that we have a generation being taught by these communist bums in colleges and high schools that America's no good? Can you imagine that these left-wing rats have so infected our society that they've tried to brainwash an entire generation to hate the very nation that gives us everything?
I'm raising three school children right now that are in elementary school. It sickens me to even see what they're doing now. And
well, look, I know it. I raised two children who were adults. You've got to go to the teachers and you got to tell them that you can't do that to my children. I love this country. Stop telling them to hate my country. I know it's hard to do, and don't be afraid of them. Don't be afraid of these little cowards with teaching credentials. They're nothing. If they're going to teach your child to hate this country and to just go out there and have free love and use dope, then they're practicing child abuse as far as I'm concerned. Wisconsin Ed, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, this is the best time of the day. I walk through the leaves over to my little clubhouse, which sits above a glen that did remind you of Ireland, have an Irish beer, smoke a stogie, and listen to Michael Savage.
That's interesting. So I'm kind of like a buddy in the cabin with you.
That's right. That's right. I listen to the old sage and get mad just like you at all these politicians.
Someone has to get mad at them because this is getting worse, not better. When I read that John Boehner says he understands the Occupy people, I mean, what does that tell you about the so-called Republican Party and why they're trying to shaft a Kaine?
They're Casper milquetoasts. We need to
absolutely
clean house.
You know, I appreciate your call. Let me send you a copy of Abuse of Power to while away your time in that cabin. I'm reading a book. I wish I had it. It's in the car outside the studio. It's about the World War II fighter pilots who basically won the Pacific Air War against the Japanese, who were phenomenal warriors, by the way. The Japanese war, don't underestimate how good they were. The Japanese Zero was a better plane than we had at the time. The Japanese carriers were more advanced than ours at the time. And these guys basically were engaged in a suicide mission in every flight. They didn't expect to come back. You think that only the other side had kamikaze flights? Most of these guys never expected to come back from any one of their missions. And it was these guys who saved us in the Pacific. So I'm reading about the heroism of these men and the daring and the kind of admirals and leaders that we had in the military. And I'm just astounded when I compare it to guys like Admiral Mullen, the empty suit, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I can't imagine us ever winning another war. Look at what just happened in Libya. Take a look at how long it took for Hillary to gloat. We came, we saw, he died. Now, could you imagine, by the way, it's a separate story. Can you imagine if a Republican came back with that macho attitude and laughed and gloated over killing a head of state? We came, we saw, he died. Can you imagine what the rats in the media who are attacking Kaine today over some alleged thing he may have said to a woman 12 years ago would say if a Republican had said, we came, we saw, he died after Saddam Hussein was killed by Bush? Can you imagine if Bush had said a thing like that? You're living in an Alice in Wonderland world where I don't have to tell you what I've written about for so many years. All I can tell you is that we still have a hardcore in this country, mainly in the Midwest and the South, who will save our bacon again if the time comes. You will not be saved if the time comes by the rats in the tents in the Occupy movement. They'll run like scared little rabbits. I'll be right back.
They have attached to the payroll tax cut a literal poison pill by rolling back a Clean Air Act provision that will require a very small percent of the boilers in this country to cut back on the filthiest of all pollution, including mercury, arsenic, and lead. They have attached a poison pill, colleagues, literally, because it will kill 8,100 more people than otherwise would have been killed from pollution. And they've attached that to the payroll tax cut. So how's that for a Christmas gift?
Wow, you know how much that irritates me. Well, imagine how your throat will get this winter without Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops. That's right. I'm talking about Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops we all grew up with. They're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors. Pine Brothers has been a trusted brand since 1870. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothersyum.com.
Savage.
Rocking around the Christmas
tries to stop. Rocking around the Christmas tree, let the Christmas spirit ring.
Fresno, California. Scott, welcome to the Savage Nation.
You are the evolution of talk radio.
You say I'm evolutionary in talk radio. I'd like to understand why, what you mean by evolution in talk radio. In what sense?
Well, I just believe that your approach, sometimes you feel like talking politics, sometimes you feel like talking about your God.
Okay, so it's a different method of getting across a political message.
Exactly.
Yes, okay, I could buy that. And sometimes I can't take politics for another second. Scott, I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power. I want to mention something before I take this break. I got to tell you this, and you know, I don't often do this. In fact, I've never done it. I have a couple of boats. One of them is an outboard, a runabout, like a 10-foot rubber boat, right? And it was bought brand new in 2007, and it had a 40-horsepower Yamaha engine on it. It never, ever worked right. Now, partly to blame was me, because I didn't use it. I didn't know that if they sit, the gas gums up the jets in the carburetor. I just didn't know that, right? Nevertheless, it was fixed. They replaced the carburetors. It still didn't run right. It gummed up. I complained to Yamaha outboard once. I got to tell you, you got to hear this. You want to know what a good company is? And they don't pay for this advertising. I'm almost reluctant to do it, but I have to do it. Do you know that Yamaha outboard replaced that carbureted engine with a brand new fuel-injected engine, which runs, I never saw anything like this. They didn't have to do it. That's a $5,000-$7,000 engine. It was out of warranty. There was negligence on my part because I didn't run it enough. I didn't run it once a month. I didn't put in some stuff you have to put in to keep the fuel from gumming up. I got to tell you, you know, you got to give credit where credit is due. And the reason I'm saying this to you is that not only because I gained from Yamaha in the sense of a new engine, but because there are companies that take pride in their product and stick by their product. That's what I'm getting at. This is capitalism, my friends. Go try to get a replacement motor from a Soviet-era car manufacturer, as so many idiots would like to see in America. A state-run... Can you imagine a state-run bureaucracy replacing an engine that didn't work right 2 years after the warranty ran out? I'll be right back.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Superstar Savage skyrockets. Limbaugh plateaus. Groucho flatlines. Wallbanger dips. I won't read the rest of them because many of you don't know them, but that's good. It's good. I'm happy about it. What is it going to do for me? You know, that they used to have a statement that in a dollar will get you into a subway. So it's not that it's going to put money in my pocket or, you know, I'm going to go home tonight and the dog's going to lick me more. It's a certain victory within my own head, which it just confirms what I suspect is true. That although I'm unknown to the media because they want to block me out, the people know me. They know who I am. I'm an entity. I have written the most brilliant books of anybody in the radio business. There are others who have outsold my books, but they're not as brilliant. My books are far more brilliant, and that's because I bring to it a lot of work and a lot of detail and a lot of verification, like trickle-up poverty. I spelled out Obamacare. I told you that the waivers would sink Obamacare when it hit the Supreme Court. Now you had Nancy Pelosi having the nerve to say the 1,800 waivers don't matter. Unbelievable. I could have predicted that eventually Obamacare will go up in smoke in large part because it was corrupt from the beginning, unconstitutional from the beginning. But there is so much more to what is going on. The corruption has never been this bad. This is the most corrupt administration in American history. It doesn't matter what the media is not telling you. Just look at the facts of what this man has done to this country. He's even boasting that he's gotten 60% of his communist agenda already across. I agree with him. 60% of the socialist communist agenda has already been imposed on the American people. With a little help from the vermin in the media and the corrupt business community, particularly those in the fake green energy community. And let me be clear about the green energy. Who hasn't dreamed of a car that runs on sunlight? I've dreamed of it since I'm a child. I have muscle cars, I have regular cars, I have vans, etc. But I'd like to have a hydrogen car. They don't exist. I think 50 years from now we might have one. So you're saying, well, why don't you agree then that the government should fund it?
That's what socialist governments do. Don't you remember when America was still a capitalist nation, in large part, how we groused about the fact that the Concorde jet was built through a French-British government consortium of money, and it was an unfair competition for Boeing, which was a private enterprise company. Remember those days? Those arguments are not even being discussed anymore. You assume that a state should now fund a private business? Why? Why should a state fund a private business? Especially when that private business consists of people who've given money to the government, meaning Obama. It's corruption. It's graft. Don't you see that? If you can't see it, then you're blind. New York, WOR, Chris, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I think your success on the internet streaming piece is really centered around the fact that you just make sense. I had my 14-year-old daughter listen to the stream on What Jesus Occupies at Cotty Park. She listened to it intently. I sat there with her. After it was over, I said to her, what do you think? You know what she says to me, Dr. Savage? She goes, Dad, it just makes sense. This is a 14-year-old. This is why your numbers are going through the roof, because you just make sense, Dr. Savage.
Well, I try to. I try to use logic. I've been trained in Aristotelian methods. I've been trained in the reality of science, scientific method, and logic, something that's sorely missing in the media, I would assume. They're using fake figures and emotion and no reality to what they're saying. So I think people... Hemingway said it best. I think it was Hemingway said if you the truth has a certain ring to it. I think Hemingway wrote that. He was a man to try to write as succinctly as possible as a former journalist. And he wrote that the truth has a certain ring to it. I think it's true in talk radio or in common language between people. I really do. And I hope that people understand that I'm doing this because I'm trying to get the truth out there before it's too late, before we wake up with a monster that we can never get rid of, a monkey on our back that we cannot get rid of, the monkey of socialism. Once it becomes an addiction, to the extent as it had become in the ex-Soviet Union, you can't get the monkey off your back without a bloody revolution. And that's not what any of us want. You know, I would send you a copy of Abuse of Power for your daughter, but I'm not going to do it because there are four real sex scenes in it, and I don't think it's appropriate for a 14-year-old. There's nothing F about it. There's no dirty words in it. You know what I'm saying? But it's not for a child to read. It's for a man. I'll send it to you. Don't let your daughter see it. Well, no, I mean, it's part of life. I think the sex scenes are very good, but I didn't write it for the sex scenes. I mean, the dog show is a good scene, too. The Cow Palace dog show, I love that one. I loved the dog show. So they're in a dog show, and Jack and Sarah meet Senator Wickham. And they're looking at all different dogs, right? And he's talking, there's all sorts of poodles, Irish wolfhounds, Boykin Spaniels, German Wirehead Pointers, Great Danes, Mastiffs, Rottweilers, from large to small, fluffy to nearly hairless, all magnificent in their own way. This is page 276 of Abuse of Power. The best of the best on display. An Irish wolfhound caught Jack's attention, a breed he had always admired for its beauty and fearlessness. They were known to hunt wolves in packs. Now, here's a great line. Listen to this. There were also Turkish sheepdogs. Their gigantic spiked iron anti-wolf collars displayed beside them as they got to their feet. These Anatolian shepherd dogs hid among the sheep, giving an attacking wolf a huge surprise when they bit into their iron collars. Jack had long been a dog lover, and seeing a gray poodle parade proudly across the floor made him instantly miss Eddie. It's interesting. So then they go to the seat and they meet Senator Harold Wickham, by the way. It's a very important story. And so then Jack looks at Wickham's bodyguard, who didn't seem to approve of him. In a way, it was fitting. Jack just found out what it was like to be a Muslim under suspicion. Jack noted curiously that the bodyguard had what looked like a laser pointer clipped to the breast pocket of his jacket and wondered what it was for. Well, those of you who've read the book know what it's for. So let me just... Here's a cute part of it. I'll speed up to 278, then we'll go back to regular programming. Did you know that a Newfoundland once saved Napoleon Bonaparte from drowning when he fell off a ship? Napoleon didn't know how to swim, but Newfoundlands are notorious for their affinity with water. After the rescue, Napoleon himself is supposed to have said, "Here, gentlemen, a dog teaches us a lesson in humanity." Wickham chuckled. "Indeed. Loyalty," Wickham went on. "That's what it's all about. You know the story about Greyfriars Bobby, don't you, Jack?" Jack nodded, but the senator pointed to a waiting group of Skye Terriers and continued, Greyfriars became famous in 19th century Edinburgh after reportedly spending 14 years guarding over the grave of his owner, John Grey. A year after this loyal little dog died himself in 1873, a statue and fountain were built in the Scottish capital to remember him. I know the story well, Jack said with a nod, from the 1961 Disney film about that angel with fur called Greyfriars Bobby. Wickham smiled warmly. Saw it as a boy, made me what I am today. I don't just mean the dog lover. I mean the concept of loyalty, dedication, no matter the inconvenience or cost. Without it, you're nothing. Jack was enjoying the conversation, but had more pressing matters on hand. Senator, we need to talk about the hand of Allah. And I'll stop right there. This book is about one man who tries to stop the next 9/11, which is going to be conducted in America by the hand of Allah. Okay, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Illinois, Jason, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to say that I think your view of the protesters is wrong. I think that capitalism actually is an evil system, and I'm not saying that socialism is the answer, but there ought to be something better than...
There ought to be. And what would that be, since neither system works? What system would work? Trading corn for cars?
Bartering would work better than this.
Oh, bartering. What do you have to barter, Jason? Jason, what do you have to barter? Jason, stop. What do you have to barter for the electric that comes into your house?
Nothing, really. But if we
all right, so therefore you don't like the system because you're a loser in it.
No, I don't like the system.
Well, you're a loser in the system, so you don't like it. You're one of those who want the government to hold you by the hand and give you a handout. I understand why you want communism. But if you remember what communism did in the ex-Soviet Union, there was massive starvation and deprivation. Didn't you learn that in school, Jason?
It's getting ready to happen here, under capitalism.
Oh, Jason, please. It didn't happen here, Jason. Jason, there's no hunger in America. Nobody's shivering to death at night for lack of warmth. Don't give me that garbage. You've got a warm bed to go to at night, don't you?
I do. 50,000 factories.
Oh, wait. Don't give me statistics. Who provides that electric for you in that heat, Jason?
Somebody in a coal-fired power plant somewhere.
Uh-huh. And that's polluting, isn't it?
Well, it is.
It's polluting the environment.
So
Jason, it's polluting that evil coal-fired plant.
Oh, so we should just sit in our house?
Yeah. Well, maybe the wind coming out of your mouth can be harvested and harnessed to warm you up underneath your parka.
So we should all just...
Well, Jason, what world do you live in? Tell me what world you live in. You live in a world of delusion. You're living in a warm house. You're not hungry, right? And someone is providing you with the heat, the electricity, the running water, police services, fire services. If you fall down, God forbid, you get to a hospital for free. All of that costs something. Who do you think is paying for it, Jason?
Me. I pay for it.
Wait a minute. You pay for all of it?
For most of it. My taxes go to pay for roads, my insurance that I have through my job pays for my health care.
So you do work. Well, welcome to the working poor. What percent of your taxes are federal?
Oh, I don't. I probably pay a good fourth of my income in taxes total. I don't know what goes to where, state.
Do you earn less than or more than $30,000 a year?
More than. Double that, actually.
You earn about $60,000 a year. So you're in the lower quartile of federal taxation. Do you know who pays the majority of federal taxes?
Mm-mm.
Yes or no?
No.
The majority of federal taxes are paid by the rich. Did you know that or not?
No, that's good. That's the way it should be.
And did you know that the poor pay no federal taxes?
They don't pay federal taxes per se.
That's right. They pay no federal taxes. And do you know that 53% of the American people pay the majority of all the taxes and 47% pay no federal taxes? You think that's a fair system, that nearly one out of two workers should pay no taxes?
Is it fair that 400 people
own... No, don't change the argument. Is it fair that one out of two pay no taxes? Is it fair that General Electric pays no income tax on $5.3 billion in earnings, and they get away with it because Jeffrey Immelt of GE works for Obama in the some jobs council or whatever? Do you think that's fair?
No, that's not fair, but one out of two.
Do you think it's fair that Obama grants another $1.2 billion in free loans to a crony in the solar energy business because the man donates money to him? You can't admit that that's fair. I mean, you wouldn't say that that's fair, would you, Jason?
I'm not a fan of Obama or any of these people in there. I don't.
Well, all right, good. I'm glad. You're not as bad as you sounded originally. That's all. Let's move on.
Savage.
You have such civil disobedience, reaching a level where business is being interrupted, the public safety is being affected, public health is being affected, and there's no governor. I'm all in favor of the right to protest. I live by the First Amendment. However, I do not interfere with other people's rights to come to and from work, go to a hospital. I don't interfere with their public health. I don't engage in sexual assault or rape or thievery. I don't use drugs. Do you understand the difference? Do you not understand the difference, Peggy, in New York on WOR? Go ahead, please.
Michael, First Amendment. Always. You always talk about the First Amendment. You say it in your commercials. Freedom of speech. This is freedom of speech.
Well, what are you hysterical about? You mean you don't know the difference between freedom of speech? Be quiet. You don't know the difference between freedom of speech and sexual assault, thievery, drug use?
New York City. No. These kids are doing the right thing. Freedom of speech.
These kids? Have you been there? Have you seen that they're not kids? Excuse me, what'd you go limp all of a sudden? Your union controller told you what to say and then told you to hang up? What do you mean, these kids? Have you been there and seen them?
I've seen plenty, yes. And
What are you an unemployed vagrant yourself?
No.
What exactly do you do for the society at large? Since you're so concerned with social welfare of our society, what do you do for the society?
I did plenty. I worked very hard. And now
you did what? Okay, what did you do? Let's hear what you did.
I worked for 20 years, and now I'm enjoying my retirement. But when I look at television...
Oh, you're enjoying your retirement. How are you enjoying it?
They've had protests.
Are you laying in a tent with one of the youngsters? Is that why you enjoy the young people?
No, I enjoy that they're doing what's good for the country. So let them know, let the government know what's going on.
But you're enjoying your retirement. How come you're not donating your hard-earned cash to those who are engaging in these things?
I give my cash to the veterans, which I'm sorry that nobody talks about the veterans. They talk about this.
Oh, so you think that these vermin in the gutters are now like veterans who fought for our freedom?
No, but I say I give to the veterans, for the disabled veterans.
Well, that's all well and good, but how do you jumble up veterans with the vermin in the gutter?
No, they're not vermin in the gutter at all, no.
Well, why don't you go join them, and why don't you take your retirement and give it to them? Why don't you donate it to them?
No, I did my share.
All right, take a walk, okay? Leave me alone already. I can't... See, this is the problem. You've got gullible, you've got miserable people, gullible people, angry people. This is what is dangerous. I went in front of this crowd and I saw them. I saw who these hardcore rats are. Let me explain to you, these are not kids. And let me tell you something else. I'm a student of history. Do you know who Hitler used in the concentration camps to beat up and to kill and torture his victims? It was the vagrants like this. He got bums like this. He gave them a uniform. He gave them clubs. He gave them guns. He gave them police dogs. And he told them to keep the people in order. They were not ordinary Germans. They were the discontent. They were the malcontents. They were the sadists like this. These mobs are filled with some of the most dangerous people in American society. Make no mistake about it, the reason they're in the streets is because they hate the society. They're malcontents, they're maladjusted, they have never conformed, they never will conform. They'd like to bring down the entire edifice, and we will all suffer as a result. They're not just innocent kids who want justice in this society. If they did, they'd be outside the General Electric building. They'd be rioting outside the GE building saying, pay your fair share of taxes. Or in San Francisco, if these were kids, they'd be outside Feinstein's house saying, how did you invest in a company knowing it would get a $24 million loan? But they're not outside those houses, are they? They've been deflected onto the wrong targets. How do you confuse the First Amendment with taking over a park and using it as a public outhouse? How do you confuse expressing the First Amendment with raping people, robbing people, scamming people into donating money, and then using it to purchase drugs? How do you not understand what is going on here? You know, last night I watched a TV show that had me so upset I couldn't sleep. I told you I'm a fan of military history. I watch it repeatedly. Last night they had a show on about Nazi collaborators. This is a series they've been running. It's astounding. It's one of the best sequences I've ever seen. Well, last night it was about the Croatian Catholics, the member of the Ustashi, and what they did to Serbs and Jews. You don't know what went on there. I knew a lot about it when Serbia was being mercilessly bombed by Bill Clinton. You didn't know that Bill Clinton and Madeleine Albright committed war crimes when they attacked the Serbs who were defending themselves against the very people who threw their parents into graves while they were alive, stabbed their children to death. You had no idea what was going on then, just as most of you don't have any idea what's going on now. The masses of people in this country are total ignoramuses, and that's why these Occupy groups are getting away with this kind of a situation. It's because you don't even understand where they stand with regard to history. Just as you didn't understand that your boy Bill Clinton conducted a massive war crime when he unleashed U.S. bombers repainted as NATO bombers on Serbia, you didn't understand any of it. Instead, you went along with the lockstep liberals who told you he was liberating the concentration camps. The Serbs were defending themselves against the Croatian Nazi movement that had been reignited by the leadership of Croatia after the Balkans started to blow up again. It's too long a story for me to tell you all at once and in 3 or 4 minutes. But let me tell you something. The very same ignorant mentality that let Bill Clinton and Madeleine Albright get away with a war crime is letting this situation here in the Occupy movements, a communist front group, a communist movement that threatens the stability of all of us, even that old retired woman doesn't even understand it. That is why they're getting away with it, because they have the sympathy of the ignorant.
Savage.